We have no institutions, no infrastructure in any of our organization that intentionally and rigorously develops whole humans. You may go to therapy or church or some personal development, but it's not built in. And we do see the need for training of functional skills and even behavioral skills, but not the management and development of being, that is, choosing who I am at the moment, or the development of our will, where we can actually choose what we want to serve and we can extend beyond our current motives.
Welcome back to Business Second Opinion Podcast. We're always excited to bring you another episode. But first, we want to welcome this month's sponsor. No, wait! Time for a change. Time for up-leveling our show and partners to an acceleration of the regenerative paradigm. We are opening up sponsorship to those who relate to our work and worldview and want to associate their name with us and vice versa. In the end, we want these folks to value the idea of sponsoring disruptive and thought-provoking dialogues. Maybe they use our podcast content in their organization and associations to uplift thinking. We are opening our sponsorship to new and additional sponsors in June. And if you can't get enough of Zach and Carol and the contrarian view of the Business Second Opinion, ask for a prospectus and a proposal. Also, we're about to launch the Regenerative Media Company. We'll be adding a TV channel called Regenerative Life Hacks on YouTube, where we're going to be having conversations that are both quirky and compelling. Real stories and experiences that wake up people, their organizations, and communities to the regenerative paradigm. You can email Carol Sanford at carol@carolsanford.com for more info on sponsorship and shows. We're very excited about the idea of you joining with our new media company. Business Second Opinion Podcast digs deep to explore questions about business and business practice. And in the process of examining them, we give you a second opinion. As you know by now, a contrarian opinion, but one that's well-tested and proven to give you the outcomes you want without the nasty side effects. And by the way, if you want to learn more about how to work more closely with us, stay tuned at the end of the show. I'm Zach Swartout, and with me as always is Carol Sanford, our in-house positive contrarian, responding to big and hard questions with a radically different take. Hey, Carol.
Hi, Zach. I'm excited about today. Tell people about how we came to the subject we're about to embark on.
Yeah, for sure. So today's subject is about capability building and development. And we actually got an inquiry from a leader at Microsoft. He said he's recently been approached by senior management to help him shift away from training for skills and behaviors, but instead more towards capabilities and mindsets. And he was actually pretty curious what we thought about this and if regeneration had a perspective to offer. So Carol, what do you think about development and capability building?
Well, of course, we have a very important take on that. And in fact, I believe that capability building is really the foundational work of everything. It's not like its time has come. Its time has been here forever. And I believe, as usual, one of the ways to examine that is to look at the four levels we often look at, four paradigms, so that we can see that from a different window and see how we got into kind of the struggle that he's being asked to. How do you go beyond just the next level of skills?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. We have these kind of four ways of viewing the world, but we rarely use them to make sense of decisions and issues that arise. So I first became aware of their value when I had to look at a recent client project. So I was mired in the weeds of the scope and kept finding myself worrying constantly about preventing the project from essentially going off the rails. But I ended up taking a step back and reworked the entire project through the lens of the four paradigms. And what I saw was a new way to approach our relationship and actually upgrade how we work with them and ultimately for their customers and stakeholders. And it was really shocking, actually, to see the level of thinking I had collapsed into and how that was really holding the whole project back.
Well, and what you're describing for anyone who hasn't had the experience is what we call going from a kind of less bad and do good into understanding how living systems work. When we're doing the less bad and do good, we're seeing something that's kind of fixed and it needs to be moved an increment or two versus a living and alive. And that if we really can get a systemic paradigm, that living systems, it will give you the ability to understand complexity, which I think you're describing. And if we used it, it actually would help us overcome some of the challenges we've got as nations trying to build democracies or keep them alive. Organizations, which most of our listeners are part of, and families. But today we're going to use it a little bit, and I think it's ongoingly useful as a design framework when you want to design how to change something like you just described.
Yeah, and it always starts with, you know, this idea of like what capacity or capability is missing that is actually restraining thinking and decision making and acting ultimately. And particularly for doing so in a way that's more aligned ultimately, kind of all the way through. So really in the end, it's like all problems and confusion and issues and shortfalls, if viewed as a capability problem, I think they look really different.
Yeah, and most people do look at it as a problem to be fixed, not, oh, the people here don't have the kind of capability or capacity to be able to work on what they're trying to work on. So what does that mean to you? I love your examples. Give me another story.
Yeah. Okay. So let's do this one. So we had a project go pretty sideways on us last year. And I noticed that throughout the course of that shoot, I was looking to kind of blame everyone for what was missing or what was failing to happen smoothly or what I had hoped was going to go smoothly. And afterwards, our team took a really big step back, and I hosted this 3-hour call where we all worked a framework together to reflect on what had happened. And what we all noticed was that it wasn't that each of us were malicious or foolish or straight up just incompetent. We were all striving to do better, but didn't have a personal or company-wide aim to align us to do so. And once we all saw that we had a capability to build in order to be able to kind of aim in that direction, it created a deeper alignment and appreciation for one another and our work almost immediately. And ultimately, it gave us a way forward.
Just because this stuff, it can get kind of abstract, let's compare what we're talking about here, where everything you do starts with what capability we need to build, like to work with aims. If we know about those, but we aren't using them, there's a capability building. The other option is we tend to do what you were describing, is we fall into a problem-solving mode where we think it's just we have to do something different rather than it all starts with capability and how we can take on change.
Right. So if we can stop and do that, it actually gives us a path to answer our Microsoft leader's question and why it's not technical skills that are needed now necessarily.
Right. The first question would be about ableness. And let's again go back and look at it four different views. So the first level of ableness is usually assumed to be new set of steps, new knowledge, new set of things to do that need to be given to the troops. This leads us into adopting programs that some consultant or best practice group pulled together, called themselves an expert, and gave people a template. And technical fits in here, but also things like procedural, like this is the procedure you do everything by.
Right. Like change, right? This idea of change is how we do something.
Yeah.
Get a best practice and get everyone doing it that way. And then you get it to be ubiquitous. It's like creating job descriptions and work standards from a third party.
Right. Standardize it all. So the second kind of ableness that Burson is really talking about is behavioral skills, like how teams behave, how business behaves when it works together, how leaders behave. These set of human skills are the ones, the next level up, are the ones that machines can't do. And that's what he's pointing to. What did you notice about his list of skills that we used to call them soft skills? But what do we tend to do? Why do we resort to those kind of ideas, and how do they fit into the mix?
Yeah, they're all what HR folks call interpersonal skills, right? I think you find a lot of these on personality tests and HR assessment tests of all kinds. They're easy to assess, generic, but really don't tell you a lot about the person.
Yeah, I think there's some utility to them, which is why people jump in, but they're really pretty limited. I think it's missing some things, and really particularly missing the source of thinking. How do you see that?
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree with you. I think they're useful insofar as they can tell you a baseline of how helpful, considerate, smart, or flexible someone is, right? But again, these are all kind of personality level traits. They assume that personality is fixed and then binary. You either are these things or you aren't. And then the training we deploy is aimed at making you these things ultimately. In the end, just it really dismisses everything around them that's about the core of what it means to be human.
Right. And that brings us to the third level, where it's a lot of the kinds of things that, like, Carol Dweck called growth. She's not the only one. She just popularized it. There's also the idea of emotional intelligence and complex problem solving. I think the same limits we saw in the first two you just mentioned are here. They arise here also. And why they're not my answer to our Microsoft persons of, like, what are the next skills? They're all externally determined by some expert. Secondly, they're all generically defined as though everyone needs to do exactly the same thing, and there's a checklist. That's why they're often called competencies here. And they're all functional, and we can pick them all up with the senses. I can see you, hear you, check you off on a list. So they're kind of what I would call surface level. This third one also includes and brings in often a set of ideals, i.e. competencies. And there's kind of a sensitive energy, like I'm sensitive to other people. We give each other direct conversations. I tell you, we sit and talk to each other, active listening. And so we feel like we're doing something so much better because it's as you said, it's related to the kind of softer reaching out skills. But again, I think it's limited.
Yeah, I mean, they build empathy and compassion, right? Which, to our earlier point, none of this is wrong.
Right.
But the goal here is to see people as individuals and creative beings at this level, right? This level really shifts leadership to a shared responsibility to where more is being included. It adds something, right, like a level of connection to oneself and others, to be sure. But it still lives at this level of externally determined ideals that limit essence development, both for the individual and the organization.
All right, so let's look at the fourth level and spend a little more time on it, because I believe that this is the answer to what our Microsoft leader and many others are looking for. So the fourth level paradigm is not about that external skill base. I mean, it can have some of that in it, but it's really about developing people. And that's a very hard idea. People, the minute I say developing people, they think training. They think emotional intelligence. But those are all generic concepts and programs, where our fourth level is specific to each individual and is dimensionalized in them as people.
Right. So there are no ideals to which everyone is held. There's no list of behaviors. And this is important because its intent is to reveal essence thinking as core to the development of well-being and functional capabilities. You don't get caught in the trap of personality from which all these other levels are derived.
Yeah, what they're calling skills here are really not skills in the normal sense, in that you have an instrument, you do it. They're really what I call ableness. And so a great example of that is when we catch ourselves in the middle of a meeting working with people and we say, wait, I'm not even here. I'm off somewhere else. And we close our laptop and put our phone down and say, bring myself present and really pay attention. That's a whole different kind of ableness, which is self-management. We also, in addition to that kind of management of our being, can direct our motivation and decide what we're going to be motivated by, versus saying, well, I'm not motivated by that. We can have a choice about that. And the quality of energy we're bringing, like I'm sitting here on automatic spewing out the stuff I already know, versus I'm going to work on really thinking about what we're trying to produce here, bring myself to a conscious level of energy, and pay attention to the choices and how well I'm thinking. And by the way, while I'm at it, work on evolving my own ability to be innovative. And I'm saying now that's an aim I have, and I'm going to put energy into it. So we're not just being agile, we're being alive. And I think the word I love for this is becoming. We're always in the becoming. So each time we come in, we say, I can be better at that today. I can bring more of me. I can evolve who I am. I can be there more often, not just a new level of being good at something.
Yeah, and skills is about doing and function, which all the ideas here are pointed at, right? This is all about the self we can train to do better. And this is all driven from someone else's ideas about how to do things.
Right. And when we say the regenerative paradigm, that's what we mean. We believe that regeneration is about evolving ableness, evolving capacity, not just doing some standardized thing. And we're able to do that every year, every month, every day. I know when I was younger, I couldn't manage my emotions. I was at the mercy of them. And I would seek out safe environments. And I hear nowadays people talking about teaching leaders to create psychological safety for people. Well, that's like dumbing down the whole organization to the current state of what we assume are fixed people. But the new ableness is for everyone to not be reactive to the things they used to be frightened of. They can see what's happening and they can say, oh, I see what I'm doing to my mind. I don't need to manage the environment for people to feel safe or get them to manage it for me to feel safe. I work on building the capability to see, to catch myself in some kind of internal dialogue that I'm making up some meaning that probably doesn't exist. It scares me. And I know this happens for you too, Zach, and that you've moved beyond old ways of being and of managing yourself in difficult situations, right?
Yeah, I mean, when I was in business school, right, as an example here, I was steeped in a lot of the kind of lower order training work that we're talking about here. In particular, our leadership and personal development curriculum worked all of the lower three levels, but in particular, the third level, where there was a lot of sensitive energy work. And while this made me, well, it's made everyone feel safe, actually, come to think of it, to share, you know, deep, dark struggles. And there was a lot of crying all the time. And it was never really aimed at anything in particular. It wasn't tied to a project or a customer. It happened outside the curriculum. And so it created safety, to be sure, for the whole cohort. But that didn't help me to see how it was all connected to work aims. Over time, there was this general sense that we were not all really living in the real world, right? And it was this kind of safe bubble, but it didn't help me to manage me in real time in a work context.
Yeah, and you know, there are hundreds of those examples like you and I are given. They're what you might call the inner being management skills. They require growing ourselves to be a different person, one who actually sees the things differently. Like for example, overcoming self-centeredness so that when we're sitting in a meeting, we notice we're not asking every subject that comes up, how does that affect me? Instead, we begin to be able to say, how does that affect stakeholders? And we get beyond the certainties that we have about how the world works. And we open up to new understandings. And instead of judging others and things as fixed, we begin to look at that it's our own mind that is fixed. And we can, as a result of that, question our own theory of change and make ourselves question things we have not been questioning and reflect like on our view of the world and where we got those ideas.
I think my favorite change I've seen in our team is that we now have a deeper sense of cohesion nested in work aims. Which are ultimately nested in the context, right? So as I think about the team that we have at my company, as we get clear about who we're trying to be and how we're trying to contribute to the lives of our customers, I can feel us pushing ourselves and one another in ways that tap into our will rather than some abstract ideal.
Yeah, I can feel that. That's a great story. So we're talking about three different levels of depth. We called it dimensionalizing function, being, which you and I have just been talking about. But the third level is the ability to direct our own will. You know, the big question, do we have free will? Well, most of us don't, because we don't know how to seeing ourselves and then choosing where we direct our will. But in this level, when you're really talking about ableness, you want for this new era for Microsoft. You take on things that you say, I'm going to take on things that are more meaningful. I'm not going to do the easy stuff. I'm going to take on that which is demanding. And it has greater benefit to larger number of people. I'm going to manage me so that my will and my motivation goes in that direction. And by the way, while I'm at it, I'm going to work on being more of a systems thinker. I'm going to let go of the ideas I have about fragmenting, dissecting, dumbing things down. And I'm going to really build the skill to see how the universe works. Zach, what do you think? I don't know. This feels like what this kind of ableness we're talking about is urgent to our times. How do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think we come into the world and we're offered a set of incomplete frames by everyone, right? Like parents and church or school, I mean, you name it, right? And behind all of these are worldviews driving that thinking. But without a deeper look and reflection on these, we end up thinking in a really narrow view. And I think you're seeing a lot of that in the world right now. And this, by and large, limits our thinking and who we can become.
What's showing up in my mind right now is we have no institutions, no infrastructure in any of our organization that intentionally and rigorously develops whole humans. You may go to therapy or church or some personal development, but it's not built in. And we do see the need for training of functional skills and even behavioral skills, but not the management and development of being, that is, choosing who I am at the moment, or the development of our will, where we can actually choose what we want to serve and we can extend beyond our current motives.
Exactly. And this requires internal reflection on our own thinking process to be able to see the me that is actually doing the thinking rather than collapsing me and the thoughts that I'm having into one. This process of seeing that more and more clearly over time through development actually allows us to be more choiceful in how we approach every situation.
I loved the question from our Microsoft leader, but it's really kind of incomplete because it's like something else we go to do with individuals, some of the skills. When I am working with an organization, I talk about you got to have three focuses to be, and you have to embed this in how the organization works, not have it as a human resource, train people, train the trainers, and get all that in place. The first thing is you do ongoing, you assume every day that company is alive, or at least every month, you will have some kind of ongoing education that's applied to the work on the development of function, being, and will. And you learn how to do that. And like in seventh generation, we had this monthly meeting, and in Google, it's quarterly. All organizations that have something people come together in a rhythmic pattern will build this kind of skill if they intentionally do it. Secondly, they need to have some way for people to apply it directly. As you pointed out earlier, if things are abstracted away from real work, then they begin to feel shallow. And the infrastructure has to tie people to knowing the stakeholders' lives, the people who they're affecting. And then they have to be in that infrastructure committed to pushing all of their own boundaries for making a difference for a specific stakeholder beyond what the institution is doing for its own success. And by the way, you can do this kind of infrastructure for family, classroom, and job. I'm about to do a regenerative parent workshop or community so that we can bring this idea of ongoing education and the infrastructure to support it. The third thing you have to have is a condition of employment or being a part of the family that people use this infrastructure and make promises to the stakeholders. So if it's a company and you have people running a line, they're still making a promise to a particular stakeholder who buys the product of the company or the services, and they're committing to help that stakeholder have a life that works more powerfully and to grow and develop themselves to fulfill that promise. So if you don't have those three things in place, having a list of the new skills and training people is not going to cut the mustard. And I'd like to throw in a fourth one, if you'll let me here. The organization needs to provide the resources to ensure all of that ongoing education, the infrastructure, and the promises beyond ABLES can be carried out. So, Zach, I mean, we've tried to respond to our Microsoft leader's question. I'm kind of curious about what all this gives hope to you for, or maybe faith in humans to do this, and what it makes you really care about. And how would you summarize what you'd say to our Microsoft leader rather than just what are the next skills?
Yeah, I mean, I think just to reinforce your point, I mean, I think it's the ongoing structured development of well-being and function, right? That's sourced from our essence that allows us to be able to grow as leaders. Because in the end, you got to be able to lead yourself before you can lead anyone else, Charlie Brown.
Yeah, I really agree with that. I mean, for me, it's to stop asking the question, how do we change people? What's the next thing we do to change them? And we look at how we create an organization. This is the way you live, like I just described. And it's about a deep set of work. So I think it was a great question, but I think it's kind of narrow.
We have several new learning communities to do this kind of thinking starting in 2021. And if today's show intrigued you, it was sparked by a member in one of our regenerative business communities. The second year is about leadership, including leadership of change in one's business, organization, or industry. And so don't forget to check out our different business communities at carolsanfordinstitute.com under offerings.
And many of you, probably sitting here listening, come up with ideas for a Business Second Opinion show and would wonder how you can get to us. Well, we have a webpage. It's called businesssecondopinion.com. You can go there and you can bring us a question, but you need to make sure it's tied, like our article today, it's tied to an authored article, which we will put in the show notes, that people can reach out, find it, read it. And we use Harvard Business Review all the time, but it has to be an ongoing published one. And remember, you can't ask us what's our opinion on something. This show is second opinion. We critique other people's thinking and bring some thoughts to it based on that.
And by the way, your organization can set up a book club for the regenerative life using an extensive workbook and video online workshops for free. There's also 50% discounts on bulk buys through Carol's publisher. More on carolsanford.com. And this has been Business Second Opinion.